Save big money on your kitchen project at Menards. We carry everything you need to turn your kitchen dreams into reality. Renovate your space with new cabinets from Cardell. They're ready to install and come in a variety of styles. Visit our kitchen showrooms in-store or go to Menards.com for free design estimates today. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer for all of our hot deals going on now. Save big money
at Menards. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Welcome down to the Helmet. Got a special guest this week, Paul Perdicchese. You know him from SaturdayToSundayFootball.com, also the Saturday to Sunday podcast that you can find on all of your platforms here. And in this two-parter, so you're going to hear part one in this episode, part two also this week. But we chop it up, talk all things rookie rankings, and he has a great process. He goes into this deep. He's following these players as prospects as they go through their collegiate years, and not just, you know, 2023 for the 2024 class. So he's doing rankings a full year out, if not earlier than that. So some great discussion here at all the skill positions. Plus, at the end of part two, he's going to give us a couple names here to monitor as we go through players like Xavier Leggett and others that could pop up in 2024 for the 2025 draft cycle. So thanks to Paul for coming on. He was on Under the Helmet a few years ago. Great to have him back talking 2024 draft cycle here in our discussion. All right, we got Paul Perdicchese here out of the SaturdayToSundayFootball.com universe. He also has a podcast, so great to have him on. We're going to chop it up with the rookie rankings, talk a little 2025 as well. Never too early for some of those rookie picks you might be thinking of trading or acquiring as well this time of year, a whole year out. So Paul, welcome into the post-NFL draft space here. We're going to talk some rankings with you and what basically occurred just a week ago to really shift the landscape of the NFL and dynasty here. So I really respect that you put out rankings in general, and just kind of talk about your process of, do you do it pre-draft? Do you adjust it post-draft? Or do you pretty much wait for the NFL to give you all the information so that you have less to do at this process? Or you just knee deep in it for 4 or 5 months through mock drafting and all of that?
Well, first, Chad, thanks for having me on. I always appreciate talking ball with you and talking about these prospects. Yeah, so for me, you know, we start ranks, you know, we do Devy ranks, but we start like the new upcoming class of like draft eligible ranks way back in the summer. So like I started this in the summer of 2023, and all my rankings are film based all the way up until the weekend of the NFL draft. And then I create a new tab on my rankings notebook that is exclusively for dynasty rookie rankings. So literally up until the minute they're drafted, I'm just basing my rankings on film evals. You know, obviously we are sometimes limited in terms of how much film eval we get, but based on what is available to me, my rankings the whole year from the summer through to college football season, through to pre-draft process, are based on film. Obviously, the All-Star circuit with the Senior Bowl and the Shrine Bowl, the combine mixed in there to break some ties and move people around within tiers or send me back to the film. And then not until draft weekend, when they start getting picked by NFL teams, then I start making my actual dynasty rookie rankings, because I'd be naive if I didn't incorporate draft capital, landing spot, immediate depth chart, offensive scheme, and all those things, because those things carry so much weight in terms of guys transitioning from the college game to the NFL game that sometimes, you know, I think sometimes people hold on to their bias a little bit in their film evals. And I think we have to adapt to it and understand that, you know, sometimes the NFL sees things differently, and draft capital is a real thing. And I might love a guy who was taken in the sixth or seventh round, But we know that the window and the margin for error is so significantly smaller for that prospect. Everything has to break right. An opening, maybe in a depth chart or an injury, has to break right. And they have to seize it immediately because they just might not have, you know, that area of like, okay, they can mess up, they can struggle, but still get a second chance, still get a third chance. And we know people with early round draft capital get that opportunity. We know people with early round draft capital don't often get overdrafted the following year. And I always talk on my show about round four, round five running backs. We get excited about some of these guys, but their longevity is very in flux. And we started out with Michael Carter, and we've seen with so many players over the years that we get excited, even Damian Pierce, right? We see things and then they either overdraft or they move on. There's not enough draft capital that really forces teams to still stick with that guy. And I think it matters a lot to make sure we adjust our ranks.
Yeah, that well said. And what I impose and charge people with is, you know, that even if you don't play Devy, but I would say have a Devy mindset, because you mentioned, you know, you start with this class and you were starting last summer, you know, and some people, you know, they might know prospects on a team they follow. Hey, I'm a big fan of Florida State, you know, or they might know prospects from their conference, which is getting convoluted. But I always say that if you live the story of more of these prospects as you go through, because I don't know about you, Paul, but I really don't like when I see certain resources and they only reference the last season they played. And I think there's a lot more to the story of a prospect. And if you look at age production, you look at what do they do at 18, 19 years old, do they flash as a freshman? I always think of Christian Kirk, you know, came into the Texas A&M and just had a great 18-year-old season. And some guys flatten out. They see more competition as life goes on. Some guys flash in year five, like Xavier Leggett or something like that. So I just think everyone has a story. And when you limit it to, okay, your last year before the NFL draft, and that's all that counts, like I would tell people that you play a little Devy maybe, but also just be a little more tuned into college football, because it's really going to help you when they're rookies in the NFL, because you're going to have more of a connection with the entire body of work and not just, oh, I saw Jaden Daniels as an LSU quarterback. Did you know he played at Arizona State? Did you watch him at Arizona State? See that journey a little bit. So can you speak to that just a little bit of watching and trying to take in a little bit more than just one college season when you're evaluating them as prospects?
Yeah, I think it's really important to know the whole picture. And, you know, there are guys that show a lot of growth and development. I mean, look at Jaden Daniels, the growth and development he had over whatever, 5 years or whatever it was in college football. The stories of Jermaine Burden and Javon Baker and how highly regarded they were as recruits. And, you know, Javon Baker ended up at UCF. Like, obviously, Jermaine Burden made the transfer switch to, another major big college program. But these stories, I think, tell the entire picture of these guys. It really allows, you know, like a guy who's an underrated sleeper and like Tyrone Tracy Jr. Like, do some people even know? I'm sure they heard he was a wide receiver, and he was a guy that obviously I wasn't really into early in his years in college football. But once I found out, like, you know, I watched his film, I was like, wow, this is a really interesting prospect. I just didn't watch his running back highlights from this year. I tried to find some of it when he was playing wide receiver before he made, you know, the transfer, and we saw him exclusively as a running back. I wanted to see some of that early college production as a wide receiver, what he looked like running routes in the open field as a receiver. I think it tells the complete body of picture. I think we sometimes get so, you know, locked in on what they just do in this final year that, like, and sometimes people make takes they can't come off of. Like, I never would have thought 4 years ago that Bo Nix would have been sitting here as a first-round pick, pick 12 overall, because his Auburn days were just so dreadful. Decision-making, accuracy, ball placement. But
wasn't he going to make the NFL, probably?
Yeah, no, exactly. And then you see the, you know, and Michael Panix, all the injuries at Indiana. Like, you have to see the whole body of work. And, like, yeah, what he did at Auburn, there's been enough years since that I didn't really regard it anymore in my evaluation on him. It wasn't just 1 year at Oregon, but I do think understanding the whole picture. Once upon a time, he was one of the most highly regarded, you know, high school quarterback prospects. So there was a lot in terms of his athletic ability, in terms of his physical traits. And then you saw him have those struggles, and then you saw the development. So I think the entire picture, the more you know, whether that's, like you said, Devy, whether that's listening to podcasts, whether it's watching college football, not just kind of coming in in January, right, a couple months before the draft season, you hear some stuff about the Senior Bowl and the Combine, and then that's what you make all your judgments on, just what's in the last X amount of months leading up to the draft. Because I do think you lose some nuance, you lose some understanding in terms of the evaluation process if you don't have more of the complete picture.
So the two key players, and you kind of alluded to them at the quarterback position, and it seemed, I would say, not to lead the witness, but it seems like you're on the lower band when you kind of look at what the market's doing, is Bo Nix and Michael Penix. That I think you really have to decide, first of all, the landing spot with Michael Penix going to Atlanta, maybe some guaranteed wait time. And then Bo Nix, like you said, tale of two landing spots there, look like a completely different quarterback at Oregon. And still, we had an over-under on, maybe he goes round one, maybe he doesn't. And the question of, if Denver doesn't take him, how far does he go? Maybe he goes to the Raiders one spot later. Maybe he goes in round two or three. We really will never have an answer to that. Something you said earlier in the show, I actually think falling in the draft is more of a key indicator than someone going higher than you expect, just because it takes one team deciding for someone to rise. It takes every team deciding to pass for you to slide. But talk about Penix, talk about Bo Nix. Because it seems like on your overall board, you're probably not likely to recommend folks draft them all that much. Like, they wouldn't be pivotal target players of the quarterback position for you.
Yeah, and I think when it comes to disregards, there is some real life aspect of this also. I do sometimes feel like, even in super flex drafts and super flex rankings, that we sometimes overvalue quarterbacks in terms of guys that, if I think their ceiling is probably mid quarterback two, maybe outside chance high quarterback two, I think sometimes passing on guys, who I think could have a higher ceiling at a different position, I think sometimes is just a, for me, in the way I play, I do think sometimes there are quarterbacks to be had, especially guys who kind of become, the back third, let's say, of their career, can be had for picks, whether it's the middle of the second round or the late second round or stuff like that. In rookie drafts, I think sometimes those players are available. So for me, I look at a guy like Penix and Nix, and I think to myself, yeah, if you're telling me second half of round two, okay, I'm comfortable there, but I don't want to take him over first round wide receivers.
You could probably trade that pick for Kirk Cousins.
Exactly.
To be fair.
And that's what I'm saying. Or people are out on Matthew Stafford because, maybe he doesn't have a lot of years left. I don't think he's going to be a guy that plays maybe as long as some of these quarterbacks have gone, just if you kind of read the tea leaves a little bit. And for me, I can get a Kirk Cousins or Matt Stafford for maybe a couple years, get production that I think is going to be better than early career Bo Nix and Michael Penix. And to me, best case scenario, Bo Nix or Michael Penix become a middle of the run, overall QB 14 to 20. That's to me where I see their ceiling. And it's the same thing I kind of tie it into, as a Giants fan, I wanted them to get a quarterback in this draft, but I didn't want J.J. McCarthy, and I didn't want Michael Penix, and I didn't want Bo Nix, because to me, their ceilings is just not high enough. And I kind of use that mindset personally in my, fantasy leagues for Superflex, that I want to get the guys who, I think I could see a path or a ceiling to be QB 6, QB 5, QB 8. That's the guys I'll target.
Did you want Drake May?
I would want Drake May. Don't love the landing spot, but
I meant for the Giants. If the Giants made a trade up to get Drake May, it sounds like you would have been more on board with that.
100%. I was lucky enough to be with Sig and Matt Waldman for round one of their coverage last week, and he was the guy. And listen, I know there's a lot of inconsistencies with him, and there's some things that he's got to clean up, but I still see a path where, if he put it together, and I would have trusted Dable, he could be a Justin Herbert-like player. So that, to me, is what I'm looking for. I wasn't in on the J.J. McCarthy, because to me, if J.J. McCarthy hits, he's a more athletic Brock Purdy, or more physically gifted, maybe is the better words. He's Jared Goff. He's Kirk Cousins. I don't know if those guys are winning Super Bowls. I haven't seen
What's a pretzel with McCarthy? Was he got it kind of worked out as expected, which is Drake May was my favorite. He goes to the worst landing spot, at least initially. I like the things that they did in the draft to help him with Jalen Polk and others as they went along, without a first round pick, obviously, to help bolster what they had. But you have the New England landing spot considered the worst, and then you have J.J. McCarthy, which, they didn't have to even trade up, so it didn't even hurt their capital that much with some big, giving up three first round picks to get J.J. McCarthy. And he got uber weapons and a good situation, a good system. And so I'm sure, Paul, you're in the same situation I am, which is like, I was okay with McCarthy, but when he gets the best landing spot, he could end up looking good early or in the first 2 or 3 years. And it really is system based. And it's like, well, if Drake May had gotten that situation, what would he be doing? You know, we could have a lot of, you know, situation and landing spot really does move the needle for quarterbacks, where if you're in dysfunction, good luck trying to succeed. And if you're fostered in a good situation, not to say Brock Purdy, you know, couldn't have succeeded elsewhere, but he gets a really great landing spot and he has the tools to connect well with a Kyle Shanahan system. And it's always a TBD on what would have happened otherwise.
Yeah. And I think you bring up a great point there. And like, before the draft started, if somebody would have said, Paul, kind of project where you're going to have your big board ranks for dynasty, I would have said I would have been much more separated between where I had Drake May after we knew their landing spot and where I had J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah.
But because I do have Drake May slightly ahead, one spot ahead, and McCarthy after him. And my stance was, if you need somebody right now, I would totally say go get J.J. McCarthy. If you need a guy that you want to put in and get functional quarterback play for your dynasty team, I understand taking McCarthy. But if you are okay right now and you're still just add into the quarterback room, then I would say go get Drake May. I didn't see a scenario before the draft where I would have J.J. McCarthy in my overall big board ahead of Brock Bowers, ahead of the top running back or some of these other round one wide receivers. But the landing spot makes it so intriguing. Like, we've seen Brock Purdy be a really good, productive fantasy quarterback in that landing spot with that scheme. And McCarthy is set up in that regard. You know, so for me, I had to keep him. I had to put him where I have him, just because while I don't love the player, I'm also not so locked in on my takes to not think that I could be downplaying his upside. Maybe there's more upside than I personally see. And then you take into account the situation with, you know, Jordan Addison, Justin Jefferson, TJ Hockenson, Aaron Jones for a year or two, you know, good offensive line play, you know, or at the tackle position. So he's set up there. So it would be silly to hold on to my takes of having questions about J.J. McCarthy, the player. And I think sometimes that's where people sometimes kind of stay too locked into their pre-draft takes and not, you know, evaluate and adjust for what happens on draft weekend.
I was definitely one that I would minimally, like, draft pedigree to me, it was paramount, and the actual landing spot was minimal. And I would say it's lower than almost everyone out there for years. And I'm being more open to it. I'm being more open to the spectrum of possibilities, where why would I sit here and say, you know, if you are a wide receiver that goes to a spot without a quarterback or uncertainty at quarterback, why would I view that the same as going to play with Patrick Mahomes? Why on earth would I do that? You know, and again, it still centers on the player. It still centers on where did you go in the draft. But to say that you shouldn't have a percentage part of the equation that goes into what system are they in and how conducive is that would be folly, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm right there with you.
Moving on to running back, and two players stand out in terms of you being overtly higher or lower. First one is Tyrone Tracy, starting off on the positive end. You kind of mentioned him in the opening of the show. So Tyrone Tracy is a guy that's going pretty religiously in the fourth round. You've got him in the third round, you know, in terms of if you're following your board, which means you can pretty much sit there. If it's mid third all the way to mid fourth, you're probably going to get him almost anytime you want. Talk about Tyrone Tracy, the positional convert here out of Purdue, where didn't know where he was going to go in the draft, but he landed one of the more optimistic depth charts there with the Giants.
Yeah, so he's a tough one because I love the film eval, and a lot of people I respect in the industry tremendously really did like the player as well, whether it was Lance Zierlein having him as his number five running back, Connor Rogers number four, Greg Cosell was a big fan of him. I don't love the late fifth round draft capital. Like, that's not ideal, but I do also look at it as a unique situation where the Giants, for the first time, have pivoted away from Saquon Barkley. And I do think this regime is going to get some more time to kind of get their next quarterback in place, that I don't think they're looking to make a major investment at the running back position. Like, they did Devin Singletary, you know, a minimal, you know, contract. I think that's about as aggressive as they're going to go. Maybe they would have went in the third round if their number one running back was still sitting on the board. So I think there's an opening there. And because he's a little bit of a specialized role, that, like, there's a little bit of safety, I would almost say, compared to usual late fifth round running backs, that I do think the Giants are going to say, we're going to maximize that receiving capability right out of the gate. And then we're going to work him in terms of the run game. But there, to me, there's so much meat left on the bone, so to speak, because he is so new and raw to the running back position that we haven't even really seen the best of him. And that could have been part of the reason why he fell to the fifth round. And we just know sometimes running backs fall. I'd be cautious to people to not overdraft him. Like you said, if his ADP is late fourth round or mid fourth round, you probably shouldn't be drafting him where I have him ranked on my big board. That's more a gauge, right? To this is where I evaluate him, but I would play the board. And I talk about that a lot on my shows, like understanding the board, understanding. But to me, like I have him in the general proximity of guys like Luke McCaffrey and Dez Walker and Jalen McMillan. And I look at those guys and I don't really see a scenario where Luke McCaffrey is better than like a wide receiver 3 in the NFL. So what does that become for fantasy? And Dez Walker, exactly. Dez Walker, a lot of upside, but very unrefined. And I love Zay Flowers and Mark Andrews is there. So are we thinking the third, even if he became the third option in Baltimore, which loves to run the ball and Lamar does his thing on the ground. What is that morph into? Yeah, exactly. But if there's
too many people think too many wide receivers are going to be number ones on their team or even number twos. That's my general observation.
And every team is drafting wide receivers, because there's so many good ones.
There's a billion that are talked about during the draft process. And everyone, you can go out there and read positive things about every single one of them. And it just, I always say everyone gets an orange slice. Everyone gets a participation trophy because it's all positivity. Everyone's going to be a future Pro Bowler. And we know most of them, 4 out of 5, are going to do almost nothing on these depth charts. And they're going to be fighting for wide receiver 4, wide receiver 5 roles here for week 1, you know, through July and August. So are you going to sit there? You're going to roster, like, let's say Luke McCaffrey, you drafted him at, you know, 401, let's say, and he's your 25th rostered player and you're on your roster. I don't know how you hold that in September and October and November. And you just sit there waiting. And the payoff might be the wide receiver 3 in 2025. Like, that's a tough sell to me.
Yeah, exactly. And a guy like Tyrone Tracy, the guys I kept comping him to in terms of deployment and usage is like, I think on the low end, he could have an Antonio Gibson-like role, but I don't also think it's out of the realm of possibility. I'm not saying it's percentage likely, but like I could see the Giants using him like early career Alvin Kamara. When Alvin Kamara was drafted to the Saints in like the late third round, they had Mark Ingram there. He came along very slowly, and then I think he morphed into a much more complete running back that I'm not even sure the Saints knew. I loved Kamara coming out, but even I didn't foresee a scenario where he morphed into the more complete player, one of the more complete backs in all of football. But I could see a scenario where they use the deployment and usage. The Giants still don't have a lot of big time playmakers. So I do think there's a scenario where that deployment and usage could be interesting in that offense. And to me, I'd much rather gamble on that than like a plodding running back like Audric Esteme or somebody like Bucky Irvin, who doesn't really have the measurables where, yeah, maybe he down the line, it's the perfect, you know, set up, like, and he become the next Kyron Williams. Sure. Like I get that. But to me, I'd rather gamble on the higher ceiling athletic player with the wide receiver background. To me, that's where I would garner. But I said on my pod, from what running back 7 to 13, I think you could shake it up and put it in any order you want in running back rankings for Dynasty, the rookies. And I think you could make a legitimate argument all the way 7 for like 13. And I don't think there should be a lot of pushback from people in the industry.
You think Eric Gray is going to be a speed bump? It kind of sounds like you're saying you're not quite sure how they'll use Tyrone Tracy out of the gate. Do you think it's preemptive to think that it's an accessible wide running back 2 spot that Tyrone Tracy could win? Or do you think it's Eric Gray's job to lose if we were going into July camp?
I think it's very up for grabs. I think the only thing will be Devin Singletary will be locked in, you know, as the lead guy this year. And then I think they very much, you know, I think in training camp, it'll probably be Eric Gray because just added an additional 1 year, you know, in the system. But I think it would be very much like, I don't think they're tied to Eric Gray. And I also think Eric Gray, while I liked Eric Gray coming out last year, I don't think he's got the if you're trying to say what's the complement, ideal complement to Devin Singletary, I think the ideal complement is a much more explosive player like Tyrone Tracy and a much better receiver. So I think that would give Tyrone Tracy a legitimate chance to supersede Eric Gray rather quickly. And I do think he's going to be active on game days. Like, I don't think he's going to be a guy who's going to get pushed down to be inactive early, because I do think he's got a real shot to be the kickoff guy. And obviously, we've all heard about the new kickoff rules. I think that I see a path to them also being on the roster, like the game day rosters as well, which if they, you know, depending on how many running backs they have active and stuff like that, I don't think there is a scenario where maybe Eric Gray isn't, depending on how things shake out. He probably will be. Those will probably be the three running backs who are active on game days. But I don't think there's a lot of, I'd be surprised if Tyrone Tracy was inactive on game days. And I think sometimes late round five, you know, draft picks could easily be inactive on game day. I think that gives him a little bit of a leg up. So I do think there's an opening there where he will have a legitimate chance to supersede Eric Gray, whether it's week one, whether it's week four. I think that's to be determined.
Yeah, I like what you said. He offers something different. You know, Devin Singletary, you kind of watch him in his various stops so far, and it just seems like, you know, he's a savvy back, but not one that's overly explosive. He's going to get what is there for him, but he's not going to extend the play, make the big play, and basically be a positive EV player in terms of what was there. He's a placeholder. And I guess, you know, the hope would be, and Eric Gray, you kind of look at his testing and his profile and say he would be more of that. And then Tyrone Tracy offers something different, which I think would be the ultimate element of saying, hey, if they feel like they're not getting enough from the running back position, that there's yards left on the field, that's where something like mid-season Tyrone Tracy, it sounds like he might be given more work just because he adds that explosive element. And thank goodness they got Malik Nabers as well, an explosive element that they've been missing since maybe some of those flash moments from Darius Slayton there in the wide receiver core a few years ago. So Giants definitely need more of that. Healthy Wandale Robinson would help too. That'll do it for part one with Paul Perdikizi talking the quarterback and running back position. Part two coming up will be wide receiver, tight end, and a little bit about 2025 and that draft cycle upcoming over the next 12 months. So for Paul, myself, Chad Parsons, until next time, never settle, refuse to be average, and keep building those dynasties.